Hello again, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, how are you, sir?
I am doing just fine, Chaser. How are you?
I am doing well. Is Maverick in the sin bin? Because I saw your tweet.
He's 100% in the sin bin. He was hovering way too much around the equipment again this morning, back-to-back days. That darn cat. So had to take him up to the penalty box, a 60-minute major for equipment misconduct. He will see the rest of the house again at 10 a.m.
That's a meeting with the commissioner and a potential fine.
Well, and this is back-to-back days, so this could turn into a suspension.
Yeah, he better watch it. So there you go, Maverick the cat in trouble again.
We're going to have George Parros, really take a look at the film and see what the cat safety department comes up with.
I miss Sheriff Shanny. I miss him. that was such a fun era when he was in charge of player safety. But anyway, we're not here to talk about cats. We're here to talk about football players and baseball because it could be a potentially big day for Major League Baseball. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But first, Ryan, Logan Ryan was a guest on the McCourty Twins podcast, Double Coverage. And, you always expect a player to open up a little bit more to another player or two players in this sense. And he played with Devin and in New England, and of course played here with the Titans, where Jason also played, not at the same time, but he said some interesting things, including that the Titans, well, they didn't really try to bring him back.
It is a real business, and this time's a little different because, kind of to get through it, Tennessee never really offered me a contract. They never really talked extension, and we never really talked in free agency. They didn't really try to bring me back, and it was kind of the whole – we'll monitor the market and you're probably going to get too much and we probably can't afford because we got a lot of players on this team. And I understood it. I understood that completely. I'm like, yeah, we do have Derrick Henry deserves to get paid and Ryan Tannehill deserves a contract somewhere. And we have like 20 free agents and Jack Conklin. So I understood all that for sure. And, the way this free agency hit, with COVID and everything, kind of the marketplace, the money was hard to find in some areas after that first day, and the multi-year options I was looking at, I just didn't feel right for my family. It didn't feel right for me. I believe I want to take my time. And when I approached Tennessee with a one-year option, I said, hey, look, I'm willing to come back and work with the team with a one-year deal to earn the right for an extension, or earn the right to go back to free agency next year. And I just want my salary, what I made last year. I think anybody who plays really well in a contract year once a raise, you put in a contract, you're going to get paid. Right. So I said, look, I'll come back for the same rate. I want to keep this thing going. And they weren't really interested in that. And that's when I kind of knew.
That's Logan Ryan on the McCourty Twins podcast called Double Coverage. Okay. So this is what I take away from that. I have no reason not to believe Logan Ryan, that is the truth, that the Titans didn't offer him and that he went to them, or his agent went to them with a one-year deal, willing to make $10 million again. We heard those reports that he didn't want to make less than what he made last year, which was $10 million. I have no doubt that that's true. But when I heard that and how he laid that out there, I saw John Belichick in my mind. That's exactly what I saw. John Robinson, the Patriot way. We've discussed this before, that you get the most out of a player, but you let them go when they're in their prime. That's what that sounds like. That John Robinson was basically saying, hey, Logan, we appreciate it, man. You're great for us. You're great for our football team. But now I got to go make our football team younger and better.
When you hear Logan Ryan speak right there, doesn't that bring more credence to the conversation that we had last week about Logan Ryan and the fact that he went on Instagram, he made that announcement, he thanked the Titans fans, he thanked his teammates, he thanked the animal community here in Nashville, and did not thank ownership or coaches or anyone in the front office publicly. And sure, at the end of it, he made the comment of, I look forward to playing at an elite level for my next team. And, we were kind of speculating the next morning of whether or not that was a subtle shot at the front office for not bringing him back. And when you hear him talk about it and kind of lay out the different talks that he had with Titans management, I think there that brings a lot more credence to what we read on Logan Ryan's Instagram.
Yeah, I think so too. And the thing that really stinks about it is, I mean, we all like Logan Ryan. We all think Logan Ryan is a good player and a good guy, and it stinks that he's still a free agent. You know, I am shocked by that. Now, we're in different times. He referenced that, you know, the money, some of the money just wasn't there. I don't know if that's 100% true. I think if you're willing to work to negotiate, I just think there are people that look at Logan Ryan and his last contract and go, okay, he might have gotten a little bit overpaid. He's not worth it now, even though he's still effective, but he's viewed in some ways as a nickel corner. And I just don't know if you're going to pay that guy $10 million. Most won't. So if he wants a, he's going to have to back off of that if he wants to play. Now you're going to have, you know, injuries that happen. And so then teams get desperate and you might be able to get a little bit more out of them. But I just, if I'm Logan Ryan, I think you have to start having the mindset of, I'm not going to get that if I want to play this year. And it's unfortunate. That's the unfortunate part of the business with this, but that's just kind of the way it is.
Sure. And in that clip, he made it clear that he backed off. And this is his side of the story. There's always two sides of every story. But his side, he...
And I don't think you're going to hear the other one.
No, we're not. well, we definitely are not. You know, he said right there that he was willing to back off the multi-year contract, that he went back to the Titans, said, what about 1 year, $10 million, which is what he made last year. What about a one-year deal worth that much? And that the Titans still didn't go with that. Logan Ryan has made it publicly clear that he's not willing to budge on the number of the money. You know, he's willing to budge on the contract years, but not the contract money. And if you hear Floyd Reese talk about this, Floyd, you know, he makes it pretty clear himself that this is not the route to go down when you're a free agent, especially one that, you know, Logan Ryan, he's playing corner with safety speed. And teams just aren't going to pony up a lot of money for that. And you mentioned injuries in training camp, and we might see more injuries in a training camp or preseason setting than normal because of everything going on and the fact that they haven't been able to go through normal OTAs.
Yep.
I just don't think a team is going to sit there in August and say, you know what, we need a corner, let's go pay Logan Ryan $10 million. I think you're absolutely bang on that Logan Ryan is going to have to come down from that $10 million number unless there's a team so desperate that they meet his needs. But I just don't see that, not for Logan Ryan. I mean, the route that the Titans took to get Jonathan Joseph, I think the Titans are banking on Jonathan Joseph bringing a lot of the locker room aspect of Logan Ryan and providing a security blanket behind Christian Fulton at a much lesser number financially than what Logan Ryan was asking for.
Yeah, and here's my advice to Logan Ryan. And again, I like him a lot. I'm not faulting him for wanting to get his money, but at this point, now you've said your piece, you need to back off. Because who is one of the best free agent signings that John Robinson has made in his tenure? It's Kenny Vaccaro. When did he sign Kenny Vaccaro?
Yeah, right in training camp.
Right.
When Jonathan Cyprian tore his ACL.
Bingo. And got him on a one-year deal. Let's see what he has left in the tank. Kenny Vaccaro forever we're going, wait, how is this guy still out here? How is Kenny Vaccaro still available? Nobody signed Kenny Vaccaro? And the Titans got a steal. Logan Ryan can be in position to be that guy. Whether it's probably not going to be here now, but it could be somewhere else. But, you don't want to come off, and he's not. I'm not saying that he's coming off looking bad, that he's coming off bitter by any means, but it's okay to give your opinion, but you just got to be careful about it now. Because what happens, let's just say the first day of training camp, Adoree Jackson comes out and blows his knee out. In my opinion, the first call, if he's available, would be to Logan Ryan. But is John Robinson going to pick up the phone and call Logan Ryan now?
Well, that's a perfect that was going to lead into the next point I was going to make, is that all these comments that Logan Ryan is making, either on the McCourty Twins podcast, Double Coverage, or on Instagram, has it burned a bridge, per se, with the Titans in terms of the potential of down the road bringing him back? You know, if I was Logan Ryan, I would keep my mouth shut, like you're saying, but I would have done that weeks ago, not said anything about his contract demands, not said anything about how the chapter in Tennessee is over. Just move forward. You're a free agent, and if the situation that you just brought up happens, then maybe you strike a deal with John Robinson and come back to the Titans. But at this point, if that scenario plays out like you said, Chase, I don't know how Logan Ryan is going to be coming back to the Tennessee Titans. I just don't.
Yeah. I mean, I think that ship has sailed, and both sides have moved on, which, again, it stinks because I think he was a productive player, and I said pretty much all last season. I mean, Darren, you know, would make fun of me because it's a, you know, my man crush. I said, pay Logan Ryan, sign Logan Ryan, keep Logan Ryan. Well, then things happened and other needs presented themselves. Jack Conklin had a heck of a year, so I had to look at it realistically of, all right, maybe Jack Conklin needs to be more of a priority. Well, it turns out they both are gone. It happens. That's a part of business. But, you know, it just I want to see him get a job. I'm shocked that he doesn't have one yet. He deserves it. He's still a productive player, but it's just all about how you go about it from now.
And from the Titans' perspective, yes, it very easily could be John Robinson pulling a Patriots card, like you said. Like you're hearing John Belichick when you hear Logan Ryan talk about you know, what didn't happen with the Titans. But I brought this up last week. I'll bring it up again. Maybe Mike Vrabel's defensive scheme doesn't lend to Logan Ryan as well as Dean Pease's defensive scheme did.
Yeah.
I mean, Dean Pease loved to blitz with cornerbacks. Logan Ryan had 8.5 sacks in 3 years with the Titans. Logan Ryan was a perfect fit with Dean Pease. Maybe he's not as perfect of a fit with Mike Vrabel's defense, and maybe that's why Mike Vrabel went with someone that he knew and Jonathan Joseph.
Boom.
to fill maybe more of a schematic fit than what Logan Ryan is. And that's no knock on Logan Ryan. But when you can find someone that's more affordable, maybe he's a little bit of a better fit, then that makes sense.
I will say this, though, and I know it's just a number, but when I saw they gave 26 to Fulton, I was like, come on, really? Like, he's not even, I mean, the body's not even cold, man. Come on, he's not even out of the building. He's barely out of the building. You're going ahead and giving the number away. I know that's silly, but I always feel that way when I see, you know, a player that's been with the team for a long time, and the next day they're giving some rookie his number.
Well, you are upset that the Predators gave away number 11 5 years after David Leguan wore it.
Was I?
Oh, yeah.
Was I upset about that?
You were upset about that.
I had a soft spot for Leggy.
You definitely had a soft spot for Leggy. In that moment, you were saying, you know, they should retire number 11. No one should ever wear 11 again for the Nashville Predators because of David Leguan. And luckily, you softened your stance on that.
I hope Brent Peterson didn't hear that. What was I thinking? Was that cheap seats?
That was Office Talk.
Oh, that was Office Talk. Okay. Well, yeah. It should have stayed there, because what the hell was I thinking?
Well, Office Talk is not available on demand at any podcast platform
that you
enjoy.
It should be. Or maybe it shouldn't. Dennis and Bud may not like that very
yes.
much.
Yes, yeah.
It is the Rundown, ESPN 102.5, The Game. When we come back, could be a big day for baseball, but it could also be contentious. We will break it down, the proposal that is going to be presented to the players. We'll do that next. The Rundown, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Enter the ESPN The Game Nashville's uniform drawing contest for a chance to win a jersey from the Nashville Predators, Nashville SC, Nashville Sounds, Vanderbilt, or MTSU. All you have to do is download a jersey template from thegamenashville.com or draw your own and submit for your chance to win. Game listeners will then vote on the top three uniforms from each category: hockey, soccer, football, basketball, and baseball, with the winner getting a jersey. For more details and to enter, visit thegamenashville.com. Draw Nashville, draw. That's what I will say to that really cool contest that we have going on. So, Ryan, it could be a big day for baseball as they are trying to get back to the field, have a return-to-play scenario that they want to see play out. The owners or MLB has come up with a proposal. They now have to give it to the players for their approval. And the players now have to, you know, this is a negotiation. This is going to be like a CBA-type mm-hmm. negotiation because guess what? There's money involved. And whenever there's money involved, it gets a little contentious. So lay out the proposal that is out there and what we can expect.
Well, you say it could be a big day for baseball. I think this is a big day for baseball in terms of whether or not they will play in 2020. It's going to be a negotiation, like you said. So I think this is going to change as the days go along. But the fact that Major League Baseball has now come up with their proposal to return to action, I think this is now in the court of the players and how they're going to respond to this. The biggest feature of the proposal from the owners is a 50-50 revenue split with the players instead of moving forward with the March agreement between the parties that guaranteed players a prorated portion of their salaries depending on the number of games played. Now that it's evident that these games are going to be played without fans, or most of the games are going to be played without fans, that is essentially 40 to 50% of a lot of the team's revenue. So the owners are now coming back with the proposal with the 50-50 revenue split, which is said to be the biggest bone of contention with the players union and is a quote non-starter with the players union. So this is going to be the biggest element of the proposal. Some of the other points included in this proposal is an expansion of playoff teams from 10 to 14, an 82-game season instead of 162, the use of home stadiums in areas that have local and state government approval, a so-called spring training 2.0 that begins in June with a season set for early July. A lot of people think that it could be around July 4th, which would be really cool.
Sure.
A universal designated hitter, geographical schedules, and division realignment where the American League Central and National League Central teams will join and make one division. They would have three 10-team divisions where it's West, Central, and East. And then the other part of this is a 30-man roster with a taxi squad that would have upward of 50 players available. And minor league baseball's season is in more jeopardy than Major League Baseball's season.
Right.
So that is basically the crux of this proposal from Major League Baseball to the Players Union, and they are meeting today to discuss this. And Chase, it really sounds like the players are going to draw their line in the sand with this proposal. It looks like the owners have drawn their line in the sand, and it sounds like both parties at some point are going to have to budge from their demands. And we've seen this before with baseball come back to bite them in the rear, you know, especially back in the strike in the 90s.
They're going to – I'm afraid they're going to screw this up. I really am. I know that everyone – you know, I saw that proposal and I go, hey, it's fair. Because I heard Golic and Wingo discussing this earlier, that the 50-50 split is essentially so the owners will break even. I mean, that's basically what they're trying to do because they're going to lose so much money without fans that they're just trying to break even on this season. Now, I understand the players – I want to get theirs, but you're the only league that doesn't have a salary cap. I mean, these contracts are ungodly, the amounts of money that a lot of these guys make. Now, I know there's the little guys that, you know, they don't get the big multi-million dollar contracts. I understand that, but it's a season. You're trying to get back on the field. You're trying to be potentially one of the only shows in town. I mean, could be the... I mean, you're going to have NASCAR, you're going to have UFC golf, but for team sports, I mean, right now you'd be the only show in town. And I just look at this as it's more important to get back on the field than to sit and bicker about how much money you're going to split. Mark Teixeira was on with Golic and Wingo earlier today, and while there have been a lot of people that have been optimistic about the return to baseball, for many, many reasons, Mark Teixeira is a little more pessimistic.
We all are commending Major League Baseball for putting this out there and trying to make something work. but I have it less than 50-50 that we're playing. I just don't see all of the health and logistical issues getting worked out, as well as the financial issues. So I would say I'm more pessimistic than not.
Mark Teixeira this morning on Golic and Wingo, and there's more from him in just a second, Ryan. But I look at the outline that you laid out there, and really there's nothing that I could see being an issue except for the 50-50 split. 82 games, that's logical. I mean, this thought of trying to do 120 or at this point even 100, I mean, it's not realistic, because you also have to think about next year. You know, how much do you want to change next year? Do you want to just worry about this season, get through this season, and then basically go back to normal next season where hopefully you can have fans? That's the hope. That's what everybody is thinking. So if you want to stick with 162 next year, then I think 82 game is fair. You play 82 games, realign the divisions, no problem. But it's the 50-50 split that everyone's going to be up in arms about.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the negotiations, the two biggest things are going to be the money and the logistics with the COVID-19 pandemic. Those are going to be the two biggest things. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, it may come down to the money. The money might be the biggest reason why this doesn't happen. And I'll say, it won't be a good look while this pandemic is going on if this becomes a public fight between the owners and the players about money.
I know.
You have unemployment rates at an all-time high, and you know it would be an even worse look for the sport if they don't play baseball in 2020 because they couldn't agree on the money. And it would be a big black eye for the sport, in my opinion, a big black eye. And
well, look at 94. Look at 90. I know that's, you know, 20 or 15, almost 20 years ago. It was a black eye then.
Sure.
And it took a steroid era to get them out of that.
Exactly. I was about to say that happened in 94. And a lot of people say the season in 98 with McGuire and Sosa's home run chase, that brought a lot of people back to baseball.
That's 20 years ago. But continue.
Well, yes, it was 26 years ago.
Thank you.
But we're not relying on you for math, so
Please don't
worry about it. That's 4 years. Is baseball willing to wait until 2024 to get people back? You know, that might be a little extreme, but the point is, if you go all of 2020 without the baseball players touching the field because of money, if you can't get on the field because of COVID, I think people will understand that, especially if there's a second outbreak in this country. I think people would understand that a lot more than if they don't have baseball in 2020 because they couldn't agree on what a revenue split would look like.
Well, and I'm not, with what I'm about to say, I'm not trying to make this political at all, but the president is very involved in all of this. I mean, I've seen him make countless remarks of how important it is to get sports back if it's safe for the country. I mean, he's very invested in this. So the reason I bring that up is if you all of a sudden have the players and the owners feuding over money, and you already have political parties and the president of the United States involved, like, that's not good. You don't want that to blow up even more with the government being involved or trying to be involved, because they know that it's important to the economy to have sports back in some fashion. You know what I mean? I mean, he's formed a committee that includes, you know, the commissioners of all these major leagues. So I understand that nobody wants to, you know, the players don't trust the owners. The owners, I guess they don't trust the players. I mean, there's always something. There's always some sort of argument between those two entities. And it's not just baseball. I mean, it's all sports. That's why unions were formed. But at the end of the day, this is bigger than all of that. And if you have a beef over money, then do that some other time. Now's not the time to do it.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that while the players have already agreed it back in March to one pay cut, which is prorated salaries to the amount of games they're playing, they're going to have to take another pay cut if they want to play baseball in 2020, right? Because they have to understand that MLB teams are going to lose a huge chunk of revenue due to the shortened season and playing games without fans. And if if they draw their line in the sand, and let's say they win, let's say the players union wins this and the owners lose money. Well, yes, the players win in the short term, but the players are going to lose in the long term in the immediate years after 2020. Because if teams are losing revenue this year, they're not going to be willing to spend a lot of money in free agency in the winter. They're not going to be willing to spend $15 million on Marcell Ozuna. They're not going to be willing to spend $20 million on Nicholas Castellanos.
Yeah.
They're just not. So these players, I understand that it would be a tough pill to swallow to, you know, have to back down to the owners again. But if they want to play baseball in 2020, the players are going to have to budge again. And if they don't, and if the owners don't budge, then this is going to be a really, really bad look for baseball.
When we come back, you'll hear more from Mark Teixeira specifically about the 50-50 split, because he's been in these negotiations before, back in his playing days, plus some of the proposed changes that we feel like could stay, could be permanent. Ryan and I will discuss that on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, historically, it absolutely is a non-starter, and I've been on those phone calls, you know, during labor negotiations, and you know, the Major League Baseball Players Association has a very strict stance about you know, salary caps and revenue splitting, and they want an open market, they want a free market, and they're right. You know, in any other year, if this was a negotiation, the players would hold firm, and you know, I'd be behind them 100%. Unfortunately, with these crazy times and this economic disaster that we have in our country, the owners just can't afford to open up the game and pay players a full fare when they're only going to be getting pennies on the dollar back for every game played. So, unfortunately, I think both sides are right here. Owners are not going to play this season losing a boatload of money, and players are going to hold firm because that's what they've always done. They've always held firm together and basically said, we're not going to take, you know, the owners giving us a raw deal here when it comes to finances.
Mark Teixeira on Golic and Wingo earlier today. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out. So you hear that, Ryan. You hear Mark Teixeira's comments. And look, he's a former player, big league guy, was a part of those negotiations. What are your thoughts? I mean, are they both right? Do you think both sides are right in this situation?
I think both are approaching it the way you would expect them to approach it in this current landscape. But I'll reiterate. I think the owner's proposal is something that the players should consider and not deem a non-starter. Look, I'll say it again. The players have to understand that these teams are going to lose a huge chunk of revenue. You just heard Mark Teixeira put it perfectly, of these owners are going to make pennies on the dollar with each passing game. And if they're in the red by season's end, then you're going to have teams trying to, you know, maybe do what the Florida Marlins used to do back in the day and try to get rid of teams get rid of players that cost money and trade them to teams that can still afford to have those salaries on the books. You know, I think you would see a big lull in free agency again if, you know, we saw the winter without Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and Craig Kimbrel getting big contracts because their demands were so astronomical that teams waited and waited and waited to pay them big money. I think you're going to go through a similar offseason if these players end up winning the negotiation and, you know, getting more of a 50-50 split on the revenues, then it's not going to be good for baseball. So, you know, I wish this wouldn't be a public fight. I wish this would be a private fight, but we know how these negotiations go, Chase. You know, people from the owner side, they're going to talk to Buster Olney. They're going to talk to Jeff Passan. They're going to talk to Bob Nightingale and get their side out. The players are going to talk to, you know, their favorite media members and get their side out, and this thing is going to be public, and I think we're going to have to go through some turbulence before we see baseball back on the field in 2020. And, you know, Sean Doolittle, Washington Nationals closer, had a really good Twitter thread yesterday of going through some of his thoughts, and you know, some of the other players have agreed with it as well, with the fact that they need to think about safety first and not money first. And you know, Doolittle tweeted this morning as a follow-up to his thread, saying that it feels like the conversation about an MLB restart has shifted to the economic issues, and that's really frustrating. Until there's a vaccine, let's focus on keeping everyone as safe as possible and minimizing the risks so we can play baseball again. That was Sean Doolittle this morning.
And I think that's fair, too. Again, this is bigger than a negotiation. And the thing that I sit here thinking about, and you know, I brought up, are there going to be rules or things that are in place that stay permanent? And baseball's never had a salary cap. I mean, it's the only league that doesn't have that. You know, they want to do a revenue split this year. I mean, are these things they can't go back from? Are these, like, I don't think there's a magical switch that says, hey, we're just going to do this for this year with all these rules, and then we're going to go back to how everything was starting next season. I mean, it could, but I don't necessarily see that. Because
I know you're always, Chase, I know you're always in the boat of there's no going back on some things like this.
Because I think there's an ulterior motive, and I just can't figure out who has the ulterior motive, the owners or the players. I think it's the owners.
Look, if the owners approach this like this is a change forever, then we won't be seeing baseball in 2020. I'll just tell you that.
I think the players think that's what they're doing. That's the problem. Whether it's the truth or not, if the players perceive it that way and they go in guns a-blazing, then, yeah, we're not going to see baseball. That's my point. That's what I'm saying, that I think that the players view it that way.
They probably do, but I don't think the owners are approaching it that way. I just don't. That, you know, they have to know that going down that road would you know, entice a huge negotiation that would take a lot longer than just the next month to try to get baseball back on the field. That they would have to know that. And the players would have to know that this is a COVID-19 related pandemic, or pandemic-related issue that they're going to have to go through in 2020, and assuming that things are looking better in 2021, then you know, we can move forward with the prorated contracts if they have to, you know, start the season late again next year, or you know, until this pandemic is on the other side and we have a vaccine and it's a lot safer for the community to go out to baseball games, and you know, you can have fans in the stadiums, then I think that the players are gonna have to realize that this is true, a short-term thing, as long as the owners do as well.
So your gut, do they get this done? If they get the proposal today, by this time next week, or even next Wednesday, middle of next week, do you think that there's a deal done and they can start the process of spring training?
By middle of next week? No.
I don't either. I think this is a couple weeks.
Yeah, I worry that the players' union is going to draw their line in the sand and make this a much bigger fight than it needs to be.
Yeah, and that helps nobody. That's just going to hurt. That's going to hurt the whole sport. And it's what I know. It's different. It's not apples to apples. It's very different what happened in 94. We're in a different time period, different circumstances, but people aren't going to think kindly about billionaires and millionaires arguing over money.
Well, and I think the players are viewing this as a non-starter for a big reason, because in March they agreed to prorated contract, or prorated salaries due to how many games they would play.
Right.
And as The Athletic put in their big story last night around this, the agreement between the MLB and MLBPA in March outlining how the sport would proceed amidst the pandemic included the provision that players will be paid based on the number of games played. But the document also provided for the possibility of a discussion about the, quote, economic feasibility, end quote, of starting games in instances where there are no fans, giving the owners an opening to say they will not play unless the economics are revised. So the players can draw their line in the sand all they want, but if that indeed was in there, then they're going to have to go back to the drawing table and, you know, back down from even the prorated salaries.
Well, I'll say this. They're the ones that already have a proposal out there, and it's public. If the NBA or the NHL, all of a sudden in the next couple of weeks, they make their decisions and they get back before baseball even has an agreement in place, that right there is going to be a bad look too.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it would be a continuous thing that we've seen for years of, okay, and everybody has had labor disagreements. I mean, we know about the strikes or the lockouts in the NHL and the NBA, the NFL. I mean, they all have their stuff. But I just look at this as it's different. This is not the time for that kind of stuff. This is a very different circumstance. And it just, if again, I go back to using the phrase, if billionaires and millionaires are arguing over money right now, I mean, I know a lot of people are just going to go, you know what, screw you. I'm not even going to watch. I don't care if you come back. This is ridiculous that you're using this as an excuse to fight.
Well, and Sean Doolittle, you know, we keep bringing him up as an example because he's been probably the most boisterous about this publicly of the players on Twitter. He mentioned that the players want to play, that they want to find a way to make this happen safely. And he brings up the safety more than the money.
Which is good. He should.
I know. Sean Doolittle, I give him a lot of props. Trevor Rosenthal, another major league player, followed up to his tweet and said, "We have an opportunity to set an example on how to go back to work safely. We want to take that responsibility seriously. You are going to see great length of adjustment and sacrifice made by players when play resumes. It's not going to be easy or comfortable." That was Trevor Rosenthal following up to Sean Doolittle's tweets. "But we are going to see just how much the players' union wants to play through this negotiation. The ball is in their court. We are going to see just how much they truly want to get back on the field in 2020.
It's fair. It's a fair statement. So it's something to monitor. Okay, I promise, when we come back, some rules that are proposed, could we see them being permanent, or what would we like to see? Ryan and I will discuss that next. Are you working from home? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill, or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game, or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. It's The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Do you own or manage a small business? Are you open and want to let people know about that? Then Free Business Friday on ESPN 102.5 The Game is just for you. This Friday, we're offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. This is a no-cost, no-catch offer. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. From your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Link Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. So, Ryan, when we look at these bullet points of what could potentially happen with this proposal, and to give you to put the 50-50 split aside, because that's not really what we're discussing here, but the expansion of the playoffs from 10 to 14 teams, 82-game season, a universal designated hitter, the schedules are more based on geography with the divisions being realigned. Essentially, you have the NL East, the AL East, yada, 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 and then I would say the roster – maybe, I mean, I guess you could talk about a 30-man roster doing something like that. But what are some of these rules that you could see not going away, and what are some that you would like to see kept?
So I'll answer both questions with one answer, and that's the universal DH. I think that is the biggest thing when we're talking about the format of this proposal, and like you said, keeping – the money and the logistics of COVID-19 out of this, and we're just simply, you know, having a fun discussion about these other minor points within the proposal, which aren't really minor. But I think the universal DH, I think the designated hitter is something that I know baseball traditionalists don't want to see National League teams assume the DH like American League did. But I could 100% see that happening. I don't think the players would necessarily dislike that. I think if they're trying to get more offense into the game, then allowing the NL teams to have a DH instead of having their pitcher hit, I think that would be one way to go about that. You know, I know as a Cincinnati Reds fan, with the abundance of options that they have this season, I would love to see a universal DH so that they can have, you know, one of their bench options be an everyday player and, you know, in the lineup. So I think the universal DH, I think that is something that of this proposal is the most likely to stick around post 2020.
Okay. I agree with you. I think that it will. I'm just going to go ahead and say it right now. Once the DH is put in universally, it's not going away. I will say there is a 90% chance that it stays. Like I think it stays because this has been one of those little things that has been discussed, and you laid it out perfectly of they're trying to put more offense into the game because the old phrase chicks dig the long ball. I mean, that's people want to see the home run. They want offense. That is what a lot of people like. Now, I'm old school. I love small ball. I love National League ball. And I know you're a Reds fan. I mean, you've grown up with it. I love the strategy of, okay, do you take the pitcher out to put in a pinch hitter, or are you going to let him bunt to try and move the runners? You have some pitchers that can hit, and I freaking love a pitcher that can hit. I get fired up for that, you know, when a pitcher can actually, you know, help his own cause. So I love that type of strategy that you see in the National League. I don't want to see that go away. At the same time, I know it's probably going to because of the way the game is going. You know, it's fun to see a no-hitter in the eyes of a traditional fan, but I would say the novice fan and the people that baseball is trying to bring in to their sport to get more eyes on their sport, they don't want to see a dominant pitcher anymore. They want offense. They want to see high scoring games. And unfortunately, in my opinion, I think that's the majority. So that's where I think they're going with it. And that's why I think the DH goes in with both leagues. I also love the uniqueness that it's the one sport that you have, even though they are all under the umbrella of Major League Baseball, that you kind of have two leagues in one. Like you have one pretty distinct rule that applies to one side of the fence, but not the other. I think that's cool and unique, but it's probably going to go away. That's just, I've felt that way for a while, and this is the excuse to do it. And so I think once they put this in place, it won't go away.
We'll see. You know, these are such extreme circumstances that I do think a lot of this will go away after 2020, but I would agree that
I'm willing to make a bet with you that the DH stays. That's how confident I am that the DH isn't going away.
Are you willing to grow your beard out until we hear from Major League Baseball that there's going to be a DH full-time forever between the two leagues?
Haven't we made some sort of bet like this before?
Yes, and you know what? I won that bet.
Yes, you did. You owe me a couple slaps still.
Yeah, in that slap bet, I still have two more.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
I've not
forgotten them.
You know, being a you're the PD, so you tell me if you want one of your air talents, you know, walking around with a ZZ Top beard. So you tell me.
Look, that is entirely up to you. That is 100% up to you. I tweeted out a photo at Porth Game earlier this morning when I took a screenshot of you outside doing the video promoting the show, and then put that back to back with Ben Roethlisberger. And I got to tell you, Chase, there really isn't that much of a difference.
No, there isn't. And there are some people that are way, 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 way too concerned about my facial hair. I'm just saying. I'm just like, what does it do to you?
Well, clearly they're more concerned about your facial hair than you are.
Right. I'm sitting at home. I've been home for 2 months. Like, what the hell does it matter? The dog's not offended, so it just is what
it
is.
Well, Sawyer told me he was offended, so yeah, maybe you should take that into account.
Yeah, I'll take it up with him when I, you know, take his kibble away.
So if it's not the universal DH, what else in this do you think stays or could stay? I don't think an 82 game season stays for obvious reasons.
No, but I do think that this is going to further the conversation about a shorter season from a game standpoint, like going 162 to 140 or something like that.
I would not mind that. And when I was reading through this last night, I got kind of excited about an 82 game season with baseball. Because we see that with hockey and basketball, and it still feels like a long season. But comparatively speaking, you're cutting the baseball regular season in half, and that means the games that whatever they mean in May, June, July, or August, they mean double that through this entire regular season. So I think that would bring a lot of attention to those games. And look, the playoff race would be spectacular. I mean, you would have probably 20 to 25 teams fighting for 14 spots in the last couple weeks of the season. So, you know, I believe it was ESPN.com. They did the math, and there were only with like 2 weeks left in the season, there would have last season only been like three teams that would have clinched a playoff spot with 2 weeks left before game 82. So I think the intrigue would be spectacular for a lot of even novice baseball fans, as you put it, Chase. The expansion of the playoffs, you know, I'm not a huge fan of expanding postseasons, but hey, if that brings in more revenue, yep, brings in more people watching, then I'm willing to budge on that as long as we are not going to 14 beyond 2020.
Well, I think they're doing that because the hope in their mind, they're being optimistic that they could have fans at that point. So, as you said, that's more revenue. That's, you know, you could open up stadiums for those 14 teams to fans, and obviously have playoff ticket prices. And so you're trying to make up some of that money. So
sure.
I feel like that's part of the thought process there. I agree. Don't make that a 1 year thing. But back to the shortened season. If let's say they go to 120. And they start at that point, they could start in May. I mean, I understand you're going to have, and I'm one of those that October, I mean, that's sacred, you know, the World Series in October, which I'm fine with, but the whole argument would be get out of the football season. So I could understand that you,
well,
rather than
gonna
start later, you want to end earlier.
Right. So if you're going to play 120, you could still start around April 1st, but your regular season is ending maybe even before Labor Day.
Yeah.
And then the playoffs become September and not October.
Yeah, and I mean, you'd get used to it and be fine with it. And I think it would be better for, you know, Fox might look at that and go, hey, we'd prefer that because then we can focus on the NFL and our NFL season. So I mean, could see that being a thing.
You would still be competing with football, but you wouldn't be competing with the NHL or the NBA.
Sure.
In the month of October. So, you know, I don't know. I just don't think there's a way around, you know, competing with college football or NFL in the fall if you're Major League Baseball. I just don't think there's any way around that unless you dramatically change the sport. You know, one thing that I am interested to see, maybe more than any of these different points within the proposal, is the realigned divisions. Because we saw Jason Stark of The Athletic put out a radical idea last summer of here's how you could do it. You could have, you know, divisions based on geographics and not based on American League versus National League. You could have an Eastern Conference. You could have a Western Conference and approach it that way. And this is kind of going along those lines, even though it would be three divisions. I'm really interested to see how that plays out. I mean, you would have, you know, in your case, the Atlanta Braves playing division games against the Boston Red Sox. In my case, the Cincinnati Reds playing division games against the Detroit Tigers. You know, I think there's a lot of intrigue to see.
Riveting.
Oh, yeah, Reds, Tigers, sign me up. but there's a lot of intrigue to see how that dynamic would shake out. I think I'm more intrigued by that than all these other ideas.
Well, we will see what comes out of this today because it's going to be quite the quite the negotiation, and I don't think that this is something that gets resolved fast at all. So we'll keep monitoring it, keep you updated on it. That's going to do it for the rundown, though. We'll be back at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. Herm Edwards coming up at 12:30, Arizona State's football coach, longtime ESPN analyst as well. He will join us later on. Stick around. Darren Donick and Chase is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.